Welcome to Merdeka Memories, a series about the challenges and opportunities faced by Singapore's Merdeka generation, men and women who were born in the 1950s and how their experiences have defined the Singapore spirit. I'm Chewy Lin, and in this episode, we hear from Susan Ng, a media veteran with more than 40 years of broadcast experience. She explains how she has managed to keep pace with an ever-changing industry.
My name is Susan Ng. I was born in 1956 and I'm currently with 938 now. Growing up, I listened to radio every day and we would listen to radio morning to night. It would always be on. My father would always have the radio on. But I do remember rushing home from school every afternoon at about 2, 2.30. There would be a radio play that was on and it was just half an hour every afternoon and I would have to listen to that. Okay, so this becomes weird after. We were playing a lot of music and I was singing along to every song, right? So Doris Day and, you know, all these old-time singers, Dean Martin and everything. I'd be singing to all of that and I would pretend I was the announcer. So maybe my love for radio started from there. But my father used to work with Radio and TV Singapore and then Singapore Broadcasting Corporation. So his friends were all from radio. But I really enjoyed talking and performing. So I'd be singing and dancing and talking in front of the mirror. And my father used to bring home those big recording machines, the Nagra, I think it was called. And he used to record my voice and play it back. So maybe that was a start, but I've always loved performing. And this continued right through school. I was in the literary and debate society. And I sang in the choir, I acted in plays, I was on the debate team. So there was only one place I wanted to be, and that was here in radio. So when I saw an ad in the paper to apply for a job as announcer with the then Radio and TV Singapore, this was in 1976, and I think it was the middle of the year sometime. So I applied for the job, and it was quite a long process because at that time it was a civil service organization. After application, we had to have a voice test. After the voice test, we had to sit for a written test. It was like doing my GP paper all over again. It was about current affairs, general knowledge. Yeah, that's what I remember. It was a hard test too. And it was held at the old TV building on Caldecott Hill. And then after that, when I cleared that, I was called in for an interview. The interview was with the Public Service Commission. If I remember right, it was, wow, just all men facing me. And Vernon Palmer was on that interview committee. Vernon Palmer, people know him from radio and TV. He was our director of radio, something. But he's a well-known name and a face. I don't remember the whole interview. I do remember one question they asked me. Never forgot it till today. In the old days, we used to record stuff off open reel tapes. And so one of the questions I was asked was, do you know how to use that machine and string the tape? And I looked at them all and I said, no, but you know what? I'm a quick learner and I guess I can learn it really fast. So I thought such a funny question. Then I went home and I said, maybe I should have said yes. No, but then what if they said, show me? I couldn't. That's the only question I remembered. I don't remember anything else. So after my final interview with the whole interview team, I passed. And so I joined in 1977. It was the first Monday in 1977. So I think it was like January 3rd or something. It was like going to school. And I think I joined at a time when a lot of attention was paid to training the person way before we were allowed to go on air. I did not go on air for the first maybe 6 months or so, and we were trained every day. Speech, script writing, so many things. And I think we only went on air when we passed our voice auditions at that time. So that training stood me in good stead. Mildred Apadure was my first trainer. And subsequently, we were trained by trainers from the BBC. And our trainers were strict. We cried. We Yeah, suffered pain, you know, because the training was tough. You know, you write a script and the trainer would look at it and says, you know what? No meat. Rip the thing in half and then throw it away. And then you have to start all over again. Other people had their scripts thrown out the window. They tell me when they had first joined. And we had to learn how to put together song selections. And then we had to write a script based on all the selections that we made. And sometimes we'd just write nothing. And the next song is. And then it's like, where's the script in this? So it was rigorous training, but I think it was great because it stands you in good stead to handle so many things. And we also learn to be very strong. You learn to take criticism and you're unafraid for people to say, you know what, that was not a really good program. There were only 4 radio stations when I joined in 1977, English, Malay, Chinese and Tamil. And that was it. So I worked with English radio and we did everything. We had music, we had the news, we had what we used to call magazine programs. And that magazine program would be everything from food to health to whatever. And these would be done by producers and they would package half hour to 1 hour programs. And one program was called On Feminine Flair. And it produced by people that I am still in touch with. One of them was my boss, you know, Lucy Leong. And Dorothy Tan used to do all our food programs. And they would air throughout the day. And radio would be where you would go to get information. So maybe we had a lot more listeners then because there was no competition as such. This is pre-internet days. This was 60s and 70s, right? We used to get mail, of course, no emails, right? We used to get actual letters in the mail. And every day, the letters would come in post office sacks. And I'm not kidding, huge, huge sacks would be delivered to the radio stations. And each of us would have a bag. And can you imagine having to go through that? We used to do request programs. And request programs were every day. I used to host one called For Your Special Day. Or On Your Special Day, something like that, where people would write in when they have birthdays and weddings and special occasions. And some people had birthdays every day, you know. But we have the same people writing to us all the time. So if I see a name every day, I mean, it cannot be you're celebrating a birthday every day. So we had to be quite clever with the people we picked as well. And because we received so many mails, what we would do is pick common songs and then all the people who requested for, sometimes it's the song of the day, right? And you would tag all those people to that one song because there's no way one song for one person. We only had an hour to do that. And then people don't write you one letter, they'll write you 20. It's almost like as if it was a lucky draw. They think you would go in there and just pick one. And if they write you many, many letters, I would get picked, right? And there's one name till today, William Elvis Honda Tan. I never forgot this name. This is amazing. 78, I think, or 77, I started this program. William Elvis Honda Tan writes every day. Every day. Different songs. You know, have different occasions. Different things happening every day. I always wonder what happened to this guy. But the fact is, people wrote. Put that sheet of paper in an envelope. Go buy a stamp and go to the mailbox. So it was a process. So can you imagine the amount of money some of these people spent to send you letters every day? So that was the landscape. It was just one English radio station. TV was the same. It's just one Channel 5. And we covered radio shifts, but we also covered TV shifts. Okay, only the old radio announcers would remember this. And maybe the old TV viewer would remember this. In the old days on TV, before each program comes on, there would be a voiceover that actually tells you what the program is and what's coming up. And we would be those people to do that. And we'd be doing announcements maybe every half hour, every quarter hour. And these were just voiceover announcements over slides or pictures about what's coming up, what's the next program. The only good thing was we got to watch a lot of TV. It was great. So I started my TV career doing what was known then as Pressos. I'm not sure what it stands for, but it was just 4 announcers from 4 language stations. And we would do the greetings every morning at 6.
We hope you'll join us again when we resume transmission this evening. In the meantime, good afternoon.
And the good nights every midnight. So I did quite a number of those, you know. And if you find the footage, you'll find me with big afro hair, short hair, long hair, all kinds of hair. And this was my first foray into TV, those pressos. And I was the first weather girl, actually. I think I did the first report. That was fun. They canned it after a while, but that was fun. It was at the end of the news. We would present it like the weather girls you see on all the foreign TV stations, but we were behind a desk, I think. And then after that, we graduated to standing. I don't remember after that. Sometimes we were wrong. And I would get strangers come up to me and say, "You said it was going to rain." I brought my umbrella, but it didn't rain. I'm going like, you know, Singapore's quite big, right? It was funny. But it didn't last for very long, I don't think.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the grand final of Talentine 78. And now to present the show and contestants, your compares Susan Ng and Ryan Richmond.
Talentine was like what the Singapore Idol is today, I suppose. You know, American Idol and stuff. Just a bunch of people who auditioned, made it through the quarterfinals, semifinals, and then the finals, and then you win. That was my first proper program on TV, Talentine 78. And that also was quite a funny encounter. I didn't audition for it or anything. I was actually sitting in the old canteen having my lunch, and the producer of that program, Go Guan Siu, came up to me, said, "May I share this table?" I said, "Sure." I didn't know who she was. And we started talking and everything. And then she said, "You know, would you like to host a TV program?" I said, "Yeah, sure, why not?" So that's how it all began. So whilst I was doing Talentine, I was still also continuing with my radio shifts. And then I went on to do a lot of variety programs, a lot. You know, those year-end shows, POSB show and the Sony show and the Christmas shows and the New Year shows and things like that. And I also did a lot of other variety programs in between. Also did things like Feedback. It was the predecessor of Talking Point. I think it was called Feedback. I did children's programs. I did cooking programs. I can't cook, by the way, but I hosted a cooking program for a long time. It was the best ever. The children's programs were fun to do. So I had the opportunity to do, I mean, everything. And everything was fun. But there are also other things you wish you can do, right? So I left here full-time. And then came back part-time because I had a bucket list of stuff I had to do outside. And I then went on to do stuff like dog grooming. This was in the early 80s. And I took, what, 3 or 4 months, no pay leave. And I went to England and just got certified to be a groomer. And then I went and also learned how to train dogs. So I wanted to do those two things. But I didn't want to lose radio either. Because honestly, this was and is my first love. It'll always be my first love, I think. So I continued part-time and I went off and did my grooming, my training, I traveled, and then I even moved to Vancouver and I moved to the US and I did all of these things. But every time I came back, I would be doing stuff. I would be hosting programs and people would call me to do stuff and voiceover. And then I had my baby. And that was like 23 years or so ago. And just before that, one of the former editors from Newsroom actually gave me a call and said, "I think a long time break already. Maybe time to come back." And I said, "I'm pregnant now. You know, I don't want to come back and then have to take leave again." So he says, "Okay, go have your baby and then we'll call you again." And so they did. So I've been here since. I would love to continue in radio. And I hope I can continue in radio. We will need to evolve, I think. I think radio needs to evolve because the radio announcer isn't the announcer anymore. Now you have to maybe edit your own programs. You have to learn to put stuff on podcast. You have to learn all these new skills. You learn to post on Facebook. And, you know, so social media becomes another thing you need to do. I've only just kind of mastered how to put my stuff on Facebook, right? In the last 1 year. And then you realize the young people are on Instagram and Twitter and things like that. So you've got to learn that as well. So these are the things we have to learn to be on top of our game. But one thing doesn't change. We do need to produce good programs. Produce it, and there will be people who will listen to you. You can't please everyone all of the time. You really, really, really can't. Only some of the people will love you some of the time. And in the 40 years I've been in this business, I have learned that. For everyone who listens to you, there'll be 10 others who go, well, she's not really very good, is she? Or, I don't like her programs. But we have to understand, not everybody will love us. Because if you want everyone to love you, number one, you'll be totally miserable. And what people say will then affect your performance. We are performers. Every time we turn on the microphone, it's a performance and you have to give your best. For every listener who turns that knob or presses that button to listen to you, that is one listener that you need to do your best for. Because you can't control where radio's going to go or where TV's going to go. You can't. But you can control you. So you've got to be the best. But we can't stop there. If you have a passion, and in this case, since we're talking about radio, if you have a passion for it, I think you need to dare to dream. You also need to dare to accept failure. There will be days when you want to tear your hair out. There'll be days where you can't get an interviewee. But you need to believe that it'll all work out. And the third component of that is hard work. Do everything they ask you to do, because you never know. I mean, I did everything. I did a Mandarin program, didn't speak very much Mandarin. I hosted current affairs programs, and I'm not great with current affairs. I think I got lucky. It was the 70s and 80s, and there weren't a lot of female TV hosts at the time. Radio was quite small. There was only one English radio station, so there were only so few people to select from. The thing is, I wasn't given TV training. I just went and did it. So what I did was I watched a lot of TV programs that were available in those days. I learned on the job really quickly how to do it. So you could get lucky and something happens. But then what happens after that is what makes us, you know, successful. And I think only then can you last a long time in the industry. You've got to change. You've got to go with the flow. I've seen all the changes over the last, you know, 40 years. And now we're doing stuff we didn't do before. But like Yoda says, right? Do or not do, there is no try. So I think we just need to go do it.